Good afternoon, everyone. I'm going to call to order this meeting of the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Good to see everyone. I hope some or all of you got a nice break from legislative work and enjoyed your holidays with family. The first order of business today is going to be to take the roll. Ms. Niedernhofer.
Liebling.
Present.
Hewitt.
Present.
Schumacher.
Schumacher present.
Ackland.
Ackland present.
Backer.
Backer present.
Bonner.
Present.
Bierman.
Present.
Golden.
Present.
Dameth.
Dameth present.
Freiberg.
Present.
Grunhagen.
Present.
Keel.
Present.
Morrison. Morrison.
Morrison present.
Morrison present. Munson is excused. Pryor.
Present.
Juan.
Present.
Ryer.
Present.
Schultz.
Present.
Wolgamut.
Wolgamut, present.
Forum is present.
Thank you, Ms. Niedernhofer. So next order of business is to approve the minutes from March 24th. Representative Hewitt.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the minutes. Thank you.
All right, Representative Hewitt, thank you. So is there any discussion to the minutes? All right, seeing no discussion, all those in favor of approval of the minutes of March 24th, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed?
Are you using the copier, Michelle?
Representative Grunhagen, we can hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I'd mute. Okay,
okay, the motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Thank you. All right. Today we are going to start hearing about the committee omnibus bill. And so I'm going to move House File 2128 to get it before the committee. And the motion is going to be that House File 2128 be recommended to be re-referred to Ways and Means. Now I'm going to move House the Delete All Amendment to House File 2128. And I think that's the DE1, if I'm not mistaken. So that you should all have that. So we're going to be working off of this Delete All. And that's the DE1 amendment. So I'm moving the DE1. And we're not going to be voting on that today, of course, but what we're going to do is, I shouldn't say of course, but what we're going to be hearing now from House Research. Mr. Berg is going to start by walking us through the spreadsheet, and then we're going to hear from House Research, and then we're going to hear from the commissioners. We will begin taking public testimony at our next meeting, which is tomorrow. So let's see. I think I wanted to just, let me just make sure I don't have something else I need to let you know before we go ahead here. Okay. For those who are not on Human Services, they did their rollout of their DE today. And let me just explain the process again for those of you who've heard it before or maybe for the first time for some. So we have a joint target with the Human Services Committee. The two bills, our bill and the Human Services bill, will be joined up in Ways and Means. And the plan is also to add the Early Childhood bill to that. But so we have a joint target right now between this committee and the Human Services Committee. And when you read the DE, you will see that there was a joint appropriations article. So we left it that way. It would have been perhaps possible, but very, very difficult and time consuming for the staff to separate that into two pieces. So we're leaving that as it is. But Mr. Berg has done all of the work to separate the spreadsheet into two spreadsheets. So, and then we also have a bill list, which you've all received. And so as we walk through this today, and as we take amendments on Friday, we will limit all of this to our piece of the jurisdiction that's in health, finance, and policy. So I discussed this with Representative Schumacher earlier, who's the lead on this committee. And anyway, just wanted to lay all of that out. So Mr. Berg is going to walk us through the health, finance, and policy piece of the spreadsheet. And so Mr. Berg is here. And just so members know, I know this has been said in other committees too, Mr. Berg is doing the work of about three people to get all of this together. And we really appreciate that. He is, he's just amazing. And I know he's also very, very tired. So, you know, we're going to, if any mistakes, which he makes very, very few mistakes, given especially how tired he must be, but you know, if there are mistakes in here and people notice them, you know, please let us know. It's kind of inevitable in a bill of this size anyway, and a complicated budget of that is just inevitable always in human services, health and human services. So Mr. Berg, thank you so much for all you've been doing, and I will turn it over to you to discuss the spreadsheet for the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I think, yes, Mr. McQuillan is going to share the spreadsheet, and this is this morning I went through the human services items of the joint spreadsheet. This is actually the sheet that shows only the items for this committee, so that is maybe a little easier to work from. I'll start off just generally with the same comments I made in Representative Schultz's committee. The joint target is 346.51 million above the 22-23 base, and the tails are 299.2 million above the 24-25 base. The two pieces combined, that is the funding article that is in both bills, hits that target exactly. This portion of it, if you look on line 8 in the House column under 22-23, you'll see the net general fund spending for this portion only is 154.9 million above base in 22-23 and 53.4 million above base in the tails. The rest of the target spending is in the other bill. Well, actually, it's in they're both in the one article, but the items that lead to it are in the other bill. And Madam Chair, I'll just, if there are general questions now is fine. Otherwise, I'll proceed on to the items individually.
All right, let's see if there are any general questions, Mr. Berg, just so that everybody's clear about what we're doing here. Okay, all right, Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks for all your work, Mr. Berg. The numbers person in the end always gets the most work for whatever reason. But, you know, the information we've been given from our caucus, at least, was there was like a $900 million savings in HHS from the last biennium, if I remember right. And part of that was due to federal funding and part of it was due to lower enrollment. Does that make sense or how does that play in? Is this extra 300 some million, is that above the base of where we were ended at, or how does that work?
Madam Chair, Representative Grunhagen, I confess right this second, without looking back at the forecasts, I don't remember how much the forecast in February is down over the prior February, a substantial amount, but I just, given all the numbers, I don't have that one in my head at this point. But the way our target works is the net increase in the budget resolution of $346.51 million for the human services bill is above the base for human services from the February 2021 forecast. Now that forecast is, as I say, it is substantially down from the from a year ago. I'd have to look at the numbers. The savings that happen in there drop to the bottom line of the general fund, and the budget resolution distributes the available funding from wherever they came into the general fund amongst the committees. So this is $346 million above the current 22-23 base.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Grunhagen. And, you know, if I can just add to that a little bit. So I think what you were referring to was the budget forecast and the fact that some of the savings in the budget forecast, the fact that it came out better than we thought, some of that was because of the increased money we got from the federal government for medical assistance and decreased utilization in some of our programs. So I know what you're talking about there. That's a little different than what we're dealing with today, as Mr. Berg was explaining. That was kind of what all went into the bottom line of the budget surplus, if you will. But the Ways and Means Committee sets budget targets and distributes, decides how much we get to spend. So even though probably some of us in Health and Human Services would argue that our area contributed to having a better budget picture, that doesn't ever necessarily translate into what we get for a budget target. So it kind of, although I think we have a pretty good budget target, I'm not unhappy with it at all, but it's kind of two different things. So I hope that explains that a little bit.
Just one quick follow-up question, Madam Chair.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, so what's the Senate's target? Do you know, Mr. Berg?
Madam Chair, Representative Grunhagen, I actually don't. I have not had time to keep up with whether the Senate has publicly released targets or not. The Senate follows a somewhat different process than we do. Our Ways and Means Committee meets to publicly pass a budget resolution with the numbers in it. That's actually going to be amended again today at 5 o'clock to accommodate kind of where things are today. The Senate does not generally pass a public budget resolution like that, so I can't tell you what the Senate targets are.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Berg. Okay, Mr. Berg, why don't you go ahead and let's start talking through the spreadsheet, which is vast, I know.
All right. Madam Chair, if members will, it's on your screen, and this should have been sent out to you. If you go to line 140, and just to orient you, there are line numbers are on the very far left of the page, and the house numbers are the seven columns that are on the farthest right on the page. The governor's columns are in the middle, the left-hand set of numbers columns for comparison with the governor's recommendation. So if you go to line 140, the first item is a budget-related item in this bill, but which does not have a cost on in the current budget horizon, and that is the repeal of the transfer of $122 million a year from the Healthcare Access Fund into the general fund on June 30th of 2025. Moving to line 227, this is House File 1287, which relates to child foster care background studies. This is similar in some ways to the governor. The next item is the governor's recommendation on maintaining family connections in foster care. This bill does the items in 1287, which cost $468,000 in 22-23 and $166,000 in the tails. And then if you move down to line 234, you'll see there is a governor's item on foster care, which the House, this bill does not take and instead does 1287. Next page, please. And moving to line 289 and down, this is a governor's item, which we have here, which does not have a net cost to the general fund, but makes a change in the way the funding is handled for the EIDBI background study piece. EIDBI is the early intensive autism benefit that was started some years ago. This just changes the way the background study, it brings in revenue and then it spends it as in dedicated funds. So it has no net impact to the general fund. Moving to line 428, this is the DHS portion of the governor's newborn screening disorders item. This just has a cost at DHS of $127,000 in 22-23 and $142,000 the tails. And this just changes the way the funding for this item. The main part of this item we will come to is at the Department of Health, but it has a small general fund impact at the Department of Human Services, which is right here. But this is really a MDH item that we'll get to at the later in the sheet. On line 459, House File 520 has requirements around a 90-day supply of prescription contraceptives. It has an $11,000 cost in 22-23 and $4,000 in the tails. That's all systems costs.
Mr. Burke, I think we skipped one here.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, you are correct.
Provisions.
Yes. On line 432 is House File 894, which is MA coverage for weight loss medications. This has a cost of $725,000 in 22-23 and $1.3 million in the tails. And then again, the next one is the House File 520, which is the prescription contraceptives item. Jumping down to line 467 is House File 745, which has to do with HIV treatment and prevention drug copays. It has a cost of $53,000 in 22-23 and $62,000 in the tails. There are a number of no-cost budget items. And again, I mentioned this earlier today, where there are hashtags in, it's a budget recommendation related item, but it has no cost in the budget. But the hashtags indicate that the language or the policy is in this bill. So on line 472 is a governor's recommendation that's also in this bill on federal compliance to align asset limitations for Medicare savings programs with the asset limitations for Medicare low-income subsidies. And the next item, also a no-cost item, is aligning the Minnesota Care Statute with federal requirements. That is in here as well. That's line 474. And on the last line on this page, you have House File 838, which is the adult periodontal non-surgical treatment bill. It has a cost of $2.1 million in 22-23 and $6.1 million in the tails. Next page. On line 502 is the House's version of the dental provision. The governor has a dental and pharmacy provision that we'll come to at the end of this page. The House is not doing the governor's recommendation, but has disaggregated these into a dental provision that you see here, which costs It is $1.7 million in 22-23, and then $45.3 million in the tails. Get that right. And then moving down to the House File 8, the pharmacy changes on line 518. Again, the House has House File 8 rather than the governor's initiative. House File 8 has a savings of $16.8 million in 22-23 and a cost of $15.6 million in the tails. At the bottom of this page on line 530 and down is the governor's item that is on both pharmacy and dental. We didn't take that item, so there's nothing in the House columns. Next page. All right. Then down to line 546 is the governor's items on 90-day prescription refills. However, the House has changed the dispensing fee on that from the governor's number to $10.48. So if you compare the House's plan saves less money than the governor's does because it has a higher dispensing fee. The House plan saves $5.5 million in 22-23 and $8.3 million in 24-25. And again, that's a little less savings than the governor because of a higher dispensing fee. On line 553 is the governor's item for the revised payment methodology for durable medical equipment. The House also takes that item for a savings of $1.6 million in 22-23 and $2.6 in 24-25. I'll mention there's a blank item here on line 563, which is House File 1918, the Dental Home Pilot Initiative. It doesn't show any numbers here, but the intention is for that item to be wrapped within the House's dental numbers that I previously mentioned. So it shows here without numbers, but it is the intention to use the House File 1918 as part of the House's dental initiative. On line 571 is House File 1609, which is the Hennepin County Medical Center direct payment bill. This has a plug number of 500,000 in there because we did not have a fiscal note, but the tracking on this will be changing as we're getting actual numbers from the department on this. So this is a placeholder for now. Line 580 is House File 1793, the enhanced asthma benefit in medical assistance. It has a cost of $866,000 in 22-23 and $1.9 million in the tails. Next page. Line 585 is House File 521, the postpartum coverage bill in medical assistance. The House bill covers 180 days. The original language was 365. This covers 180. It has a cost of $6.3 million in 22-23 and $17.3 million in the tails. Line 592 is the expansion of telehealth services item. This is a version in the House of House File 1412. It is a two-year plan, which then sunsets. And at this point has a cost of $27.6 million in 22-23. And we have nothing in for the tails right now. That's probably not exactly right. The department will give us some further guidance on that. In medical assistance, you can't, even when you stop doing something at the end of the biennium, there's some run out on the costs and payment delays. So the tails probably will be, well, they certainly will be different than zero, but that item is evolving. If you go down on line 604, you see the governor had a much different telehealth initiative, which the House is not doing. Moving down to line 613 is the governor's item on redesigning the outreach activities for the child and teen checkup program. That is a savings of $2.4 million in 22-23 and $3.2 million in the tails. Line 617 at the bottom of the page is the governor's item for continuous access to public transportation through NEMT. has a cost of $65,000 in 22-23 and $70,000 in the tails. Next page. And on line 623 is the governor's item for to expand grants for integrated care for high-risk pregnant women. This has a cost of $1.6 million in 22-23 and $700,000 in the tails. And again, as a governor's item that this bill takes. Then we come to two more no-cost items on line 630. Is a governor's item to modify the time frame for gathering inpatient information gathering for inpatient rate setting. It just changes the timeline on when the information to do this process is gathered. It does not have a cost. And on line 632 is a governor's recommendation to update the rate methodology description for outpatient hospital services. Again, does not have a cost and is in this draft. Line 634 is the governor's item on uniform administration of NEMT. That has a savings of $21.7 million in 22-23 and $65 million in 24-25. On line 644 is the governor's item on compliance with interoperability and patient access regulations. Has a cost of $502,000 in 22-23 and $50,000 in the tails. Next page. And on line 649 is the governor's item to expand the use of the encounter alert system. The House also takes this for savings of $3 million in 22-23 and $2.6 million in the tails. On line 655, is the contingency plan for the Affordable Care Act. Again, this is a no-cost item, but this is just planning for how the state would proceed should a pending court action invalidate part or all of the Affordable Care Act. Line 657 is the House's version of the healthcare feasibility study. If you look down one more line, one more item to 662 in the governor's columns, the governor has a similar study and the financing is the same. The House language is different than the governor's for the exact nature of the study, and that cost $680,000 in 22-23. Line 667 is a FBI compliance requirements in background checks. That's a governor's item the House takes for $1 million in 22-23 and $390,000 in the tails. On line 674 is the governor's item to add new background study partners. This has no net impact on the general fund. It raises revenue and again expends it in dedicated funding for background studies issues, and there's no impact to the general fund. Line 679 is the background study standardization and transition to fee schedule item in the governor's recommendation. This is essentially moving fee schedules out of rule and into statute. It has no net impact on the general fund. The fees that are raised now are the same as fees that will be raised when this is changed. It's just a technical issue about where the law resides. Next page. And line 685 is, I think we're, yeah, okay. Line 685 is another no-cost item, which is the authorization for a withdrawal management licensing fee, but there is no fee actually yet. And so it is a no-cost item that is in this governor's rec and in this bill. Line 688 is the governor's recommendation on program integrity, preventing waste, fraud, and abuse. The House takes the governor's recommendation for a savings of $1.9 million in 22-23. And a savings of $4.5 million in the tails. Line 707 is the general agency operating adjustment, the governor's recommendation that the House takes for a cost of $16.4 million in 22-23 and $21.9 in the tails. Line 713 is an accounting item that makes the human services budget fit the fund balance. Members who are around may remember that in 2019, part of the end of the session was that there was a prospective $100 million reduction in the cost of human services in the fund balance. And the savings were taken against the general fund, but were not allocated to any budget activity. And then as part of that, a Blue Ribbon Commission was set up to issue a report and report on ways to save that money. Some of those items are in this draft, that were in the governor's budget and are in this draft, to make the human services budget fit to the fund balance, there has to be a removal of that $100 million of revenue that were taken out in the 2019 budget deal. So that's what this does, is it makes our numbers fit the fund balance by, if you look, it simply loses the general fund $100 million in revenue. With that, I should note that kind of satisfies that and the way the House budget resolution is set up kind of satisfy the budget, the Blue Ribbon Commission law. The House budget resolution transfers $150 million from the budget reserve to the general fund, which is in excess of the amount that would be transferred under the law if all the savings aren't realized. We have the accounting item that accounts for the loss of revenue to the fund that was taken prospectively in 2019. And after that, any savings we take are savings, and there is no other impact of the Blue Ribbon Commission law. On line 717 is the governor's back to better COVID waiver off-ramp initiative. This is $14.3 million in 22-23. This is meant to find ways to, as the pandemic winds down and we get back to normal business, they're trying to find ways to make the normal business work as well or better than it used to. And it is not as simple as simply saying, now we're done. And there are things like a backlog of background checks and having people reapply for, you know, they recheck for programs and things like that, all of which has to happen. And this item has a variety of things in it that help the department make the transition from the COVID operations world to a post-COVID world. Next page. This gets us to the Department of Health on line 748. We have the governor's recommendation for the Department of Health operating adjustment that has a cost of $2 million in 22-23 and $2.4 million in 24-25. On line 754, the governor had a recommendation for a fetal and infant mortality review. This bill does not take that governor's recommendation. On line 757 is the governor's recommendation on the maternal morbidity and death studies. The House takes that initiative. It costs $396,000 in 22-23 and $396,000 in the tails. Next page, line 761 is House File 1531, the gun trauma grants legislation, which costs $100,000 in 22-23. And on line 765 is the public health emergency account that's in statute, which has been depleted over the course of the pandemic. This puts $500,000 back into that account. Line 773 is House File 2113, Local Public Health Equity Outreach. It has a cost of $10 million in 22, 23, and $10 million in the tails. Line 781 is House File 428, Local Public Health Grants. This is an increase to the local public health grant of $6 million in 22-23 and $5 million in the tails. Line 785 is House File 1419, which is the skin lightening cream grants to provide educational outreach against dangerous skin lightening creams. This item did happen in the 2019 bill as well, and at the same level of $100,000 a year, so it costs $200 for 22-23. Line 789 is a lead risk assessment bill that was, I should put the House file number in, it was introduced in the last biennium, and it enhances the lead program at the Department of Health. It costs $2.8 million in 22-23 and $2.6 million in the tails. Line 793 is House File 475, the Comprehensive Advanced Life Support Education Bill. That costs $100,000 in 22-23. Line 797 is House File 59, which has the health department plan for expanded use of the all payer claims database. That costs $55,000 in 22-23. On the last line on this page, on line 801, is Representative Fisher's bill, House File 162, to provide access to homeless youth to birth records and IDs. That has a cost of $104,000 in 22-23 and $64,000 in the tails. I should note the fiscal note on that also had a revenue loss at Department of Public Safety. The transportation analyst, they will be carrying the loss of revenue on their sheet, but we're not appropriating funds to Department of Public Safety for that purpose. Next page. On line 805. Is House File 1173, which is the Hospital Sale Disclosure Bill. It has a cost of $11,000 in 22-23 and $2,000 ongoing. On line 815 is House File 1268, the Supporting Healthy Babies Grants Program, which costs $558,000 in 22-23. On line 820 is House File 660, the Dignity and Pregnancy and Childbirth Act. That has costs of $2.6 million in 22-23 and $1.8 million in the tails. Line 825 is House File 1413, which is changes to the medical cannabis program. These are kind of operational changes that are not I would say are not very important in their they're sort of basic administrative changes in how the program operates, which has a cost in the state government special revenue fund of $105,000 in 22-23 and $36,000 in the tails. Line 829, House File 813 authorizes the sale of the use of dried raw cannabis in the medical cannabis program. That has a net, it raises net revenue of $8.9 million in 22-23 and $10.1 million in the tails. On line 835 is the item I had mentioned before, changes to the newborn screening disorders fee. This has a savings at the, or an improvement, I should say, to the state government special revenue fund of $2.2 million in 22-23 and $2 million in the tails. Again, I noted earlier, there's a complementary piece to that that has a small general fund cost at the Department of Human Services that we saw earlier. Line 8.41 is the governor's recommendation on the asbestos licensing fee, which is a savings or an improvement to the state government special revenue fund of $620,000 a biennium. Next page to line 845 is the governor's recommendation for the radioactive materials unit fee adjustment. This is, again, a state government special revenue fund item. It improves the revenue fund by $664,000 per biennium. And members may remember that we authorized the low-dose radioactive screening or X-ray screening item 2 years ago, and that as part of that, the fee didn't quite work on that. And so this is, I think, part of the department's attempt to kind of rework the fee generally in the radioactive materials area. On line 849 is the governor's initiative on the health data intermediaries fee adjustment, which is just getting rid of this. If you see, it's actually a loss of revenue and then a loss of expenditure as well. On line 854 is an initiative to make the revenues and expenditures in the state government special revenue fund match more closely. There are a couple of things that happen here on cancellations of carry forwards, but also this is largely technical in that it's making the spending authority match the revenue more closely, because part of the problem has been that there has been larger expenditure authority in the state government's special revenue fund than is actually necessary, which makes it look like a deficit issue. Line 863 is the governor's recommendation for a temporary reduction in home visiting grants. The House does not take this initiative. On line 867, the House does take House File 1197 and increases the amount for home visiting by $5 million in 22-23 and $5 million in the tails. On line 872, the governor took a one-time reduction in the fetal alcohol spectrum disorder grants, which the House does not take. Next page. On line 876 is the governor's initiative on the e-health advisory initiative, which improves the state government, it's a general fund item. It has an expenditure of $194,000 in 22-23 and $194,000 in the tails. On line 880, the governor is now, as part of his supplemental budget and after the settlement of the most recent tobacco lawsuit, the governor recommends spending $8,005,000 a year in tobacco and vaping prevention. The House is using House File 572, which is in the Tax Committee, and dedicates $15 million a year for similar purposes. Line 884 is an item, the Prescription Drug Price Transparency Bill, which took a couple of years for us to get off the ground. It's taking a little longer than anticipated to staff it up. So there is a cancellation of $395,000 in 21 and then an expenditure of $210,000 in 23. We're not changing the program any, we're just changing where the money falls in that program. And then again, there's a governor's recommendation on line 889 for the vital records electronic transaction fee that has no cost to the general fund, and we've taken the governor's recommendation. And Madam Chair, the next three pages till the last page are the health licensing boards, which are all state government special revenue fund. We talked about those at the time of we went through the governor's budget. I guess I will just take questions on that. All of the items that we talked about before are in there from the governor's recommendations. The only items that are different, if you look at five of the boards that deal with behavioral health issues, so the Board of Behavioral Health and Therapy, the Board of Marriage and Family Practice, the Board of Psychology, the Board of Social Work, and I feel like I'm missing one, but that's the only one I see. There's a small cost for House File 970, the Vang bill, which deals with cultural competency in mental health and behavioral health services. So there is a small healthcare or state government special revenue fund cost that is appropriated for each of those boards. And then I'll note the very last thing, and I see that the spreadsheet did not print quite correctly. It has the Council on Disability and the Emergency Medical Services Regulatory Board's operating adjustments. And it should also be printing, but isn't on here, the operating adjustment for the ombudsperson for families and the ombudsman for mental health ED. I can tell you those two items are, which should show on here but don't, are $147,000 in 22-23 for the ombudsman for mental health DD, and $31,000 in 22-23 for the ombudsperson for families. And that just the line cut off before it printed correctly. And so, Madam Chair, those are the items that are in this committee's jurisdiction.
Thank you so much, Mr. Berg. Actually, those last couple of items are on the sheet that was sent out because I had printed out my copy and they are on mine. So members should have that when they go to take a look at what was sent.
Okay, maybe it's just mine that printed wrong. But
yeah, in fact, I'm looking at what Mr. McClellan has up and it looks correct. So
it is on the screen, yes, yeah. Madam Chair. It's just the way mine printed, so.
Right. Well, Mr. Berg, thank you so much for that. Personally, I think you do such a good job running through, and I hope members get, I know this is very quick for members, and I have to admit, members, it's taken me a number of years to even feel like I have a passing comfort with looking at these spreadsheets. So if you look at this and you just don't even know what you're looking at, it's really okay, and be sure to ask questions. And the other little trick I have, which if we were all in person, we would all know this. I don't know if you can see this, but there's a special little plastic clear ruler that the House buys lots of these. And if we were in person, you'd each have one, and it makes going through the spreadsheet very much easier. So hopefully we'll be together soon, or if you are at the State Office Building, ask your legislative assistants to give you one or more of those because they are extremely helpful. Okay, Mr. Berg, thank you so much again. We're going to go to Mr. Chan to start running through our bill language. And I guess what I would, Mr. Chan, what I would ask you to do is if you can, and I don't want to throw off your presentation, but maybe focus more on the things that Mr. Berg might not have covered that wouldn't be on the spreadsheet. I see there's a question from Representative Grunhagen. Representative Grunhagen.
Yeah, I just have a question. Actually, I got a compliment and then a question, kind of another comment. I actually got a number of them, but I could just limit it to two on this, on what Mr. Berg went through, if that was okay, Madam Chair.
Okay. Sure.
Yeah. First thing, I really appreciate that you included the $10.48 dispensing fee on page 4 of 15 for prescriptions. The governor's proposal, I think, wanted to reduce that to $9.78 or something. I've dealt with my local independent pharmacies, and we lost about 30% of them in the state over the few years. They can't operate at $9 and some. They lose money on every deal. They try to make it up in volume, and we all know how that goes. I have an amendment that I want to bring forward that would raise the reimbursement to $10.77. So I'm just telling you that so you can think about it, because they say that's what they really need to actually come out a little bit better than what than just break even. But I certainly appreciate you keeping the 10th and 8th in there. And I just want to make.
All right. Well, thanks, Representative Gernhagen. We won't debate the bill right now, but let me just explain to everyone that we kept the current reimbursement. So what we have in there is status quo. And there was, DHS did a study, and the governor's recommendation was based on the results of the study. But I guess there's some dispute about the meaning of the study. But in any event, we kept status quo on that instead of going to the lower number that the study suggested we could. So.
Yeah, and one more quick comment, Madam Chair.
Yeah, Representative Gernhagen.
If you'd give up support to single payer, you and I could get along pretty good, okay?
Well, I think we get along pretty well anyway, Representative Gernhagen, on most days.
Well, we get along even better.
Yeah, thanks for that. Okay, we've got a lot to cover here, so we're going to go to Mr. Chun. And Mr. Chun, as you know, as we said to Mr. Berg, thank you so much for all your hard work. I know you're also working extremely hard to pull all this together. So please go ahead.
Sure. Madam Chair and members, Randy Chun with House Research, and we'll be walking through the document that I think is listed online as Bill Lists House File 2128. And as the chair suggested, I'll be just going through mainly either the no-cost items or items that may have some cost, but weren't really the big budget items that were part of the tracking. So I'll be kind of just skipping through what you have in front of you, and I won't cover the sections that were covered through tracking. So the first set of sections would be, and this is Article 1, DHS Healthcare Programs. Sections 1 to 5 are from House File 1854, which this was the DHS policy bill, and they exempt MA and Minnesota Care from private sector health insurance mandates. Then Section 7, this is from House File 2128. This allows the commissioner to participate in the development and operation of an encounter alerting service. This was a budget item. Then if you turn to page 2 of the document, there's sections 20, 21, and 22 are from House File 1854. And these sections modify the membership and operation of the DHS Health Services Advisory Council. Then moving down on that page, sections 36, 37, 38, also from House File 1854. These expand the membership of the opioid prescribing work group and modify the operations of that work group. Section 39, also from House File 1854, it eliminates the requirement that DHS enroll qualified professionals who work for PCA agencies as individual providers. Then I'll move to the next page, so page 3, section 43, is House File 1796. This requires the DHS to report to the legislature annually on managed care plan mean and median provider reimbursement rates for specified service categories. Then move down two lines, sections 52 and 53 are from House File 2136. This is sort of the governor's language related to the integrated care for high-risk pregnant women project. And there's a rider in the appropriations article that expands the funding for this initiative. Then moving down to, section 61, this is the new language that Mr. Berg mentioned. This is the contingent language in case the Supreme Court were to sort of overturn the ACA provisions. And then section 62 is from House File 11, Representative Schultz. This requires DHS to report to the legislature on alternative methods of delivering care and paying providers under MA and Minnesota Care. And there's sort of a second related study from House File 11. This is section 66. Requires DHS to develop a proposal for a public option program and report to the legislature by December 15th of 2021. So I believe those would be all the sections that I'll cover in Article 1.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chand. And I believe Ms. Sunderman is doing Article 2. Ms. Sunderman, it's same little spiel. We so appreciate your hard work. Thank you.
Madam Chair and members, I'll be going over Article 2, which is the DHS licensing and background studies article. And I'll make this pretty brief because Mr. Berg, all of this costs money. So sections 1, 2, 5, 7 through 18, 20, 22 to 30, 32, 34 through 38, 43, 44, 46, and 48 and 49 are all part of the governor's omnibus finance bill. And these are the human services licensing and background studies modifications that Mr. Berg mentioned, including the new background study partners, FBI compliance pieces, alternative background studies, and the background study fee schedule, and in addition to some clarifying changes. And next we have sections 3, 4, 6, 18 to 21, 31, 33, 39 to 42, 45, and 47. And these are all from House File 1287, Representative Holland's bill. We actually used the language from the Senate, the most recent Senate engrossment. There were just a couple of technical differences. And this is the family foster setting background studies and licensing modifications on the spreadsheet. And that concludes Article 2.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Short and sweet. And just to note for folks, and Ms. Sunderman, if I'm correct, that last bill you discussed, the Holland's bill, is the one of it's about allowing for more kinship care. Am I correct? That's the one that Representative Moran worked very hard on for 2 years, correct?
Yes, Madam Chair, this was House File 1050 a couple of years ago. It was Representative Moran's bill. It the idea of it is to make it easier for family members and other family foster care providers to become licensed.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much. Okay. We have Articles 3 and 4, Ms. Clarkvist. And I know she as well, every single one of our House Research folks have just been working such long hours. And thank you so much for all of that. Please go ahead and tell us about 3 and 4.
Madam Chair and members, Elizabeth Clarkvist with House Research. Article 3 is the Health Department article, and I'll be starting with sections 5 and 6. These are from the Health Department Housekeeping Bill, and they modify provisions governing electronic prescribing standards. Sections 10, 11, 97, and 98 are also from the Health Department Housekeeping Bill. They eliminate the Center for Healthcare Purchasing Improvement, but they retain some of the center's duties for the commissioner. Sections 12 to 14 and 94, a piece of these provisions are related to funding, but a piece of them are not. Sections 12 to 14 amend allowable uses of data in the All Payer Claims database. Section 15 is from House File 2048. It changes the source regarding estimates of a chemical's carcinogenic potency that is used by the Commissioner of Health to derive health risk limits for substances that could degrade groundwater. I'll move down to sections 20 to 27. These sections are from the Health Department Housekeeping Bill, and they make modifications to the resident reimbursement case mix classification statutes. Moving on to section 35, this section is from House File 1131, and it adds an oral health professional to the membership of the Health Department's Rural Health Advisory Committee. Section 36 is from House File 2055, It adds general surgery programs to the programs that are eligible for grants under the International Medical Graduate Primary Care Residency Grant Program. Section 39, a portion of this section comes from House File 526, and this modifies persons who may obtain a certified birth or death record. Sections 43, 44, a portion of Section 45, and 46 are from House File 1529, the First Division Engrossment as amended. And these make changes to hospital bed license transfer requirements after a hospital is closed, modify monitoring and enforcement of hospital construction moratorium exception conditions, and it establishes an exception for adding mental health or SUD beds. Another portion of Section 45 is also from House File 834. And this adds a hospital moratorium construction exception for Regents Hospital. Let's see, Section 53 is from House File 1953, and this modifies the definition of assisted living facility for the chapter governing assisted living facility licensure. Section 54 is new language, and it modifies requirements for access to outdoor space for residents of assisted living facilities with dementia care. Sections 56 to 59 and 85 are from the Health Department Housekeeping Bill, and they make changes to WIC statutes. Section 63 to 69 and 93 are from House File 1023, the first engrossment, and House File 675 as amended. And these provisions reschedule marijuana and non-synthetic THC from Schedule 1 to Schedule 2 of the Controlled Substances Schedule. Section 77 is from House File 907. And this makes a change to the medical cannabis program and allows patients whose enrollments have been revoked for certain violations to reapply for enrollment after 12 months. And those, the remaining provisions in Article 3 have costs. And then
Thank you very much. Yep, Article 4, the short one.
Yeah, Article 4, one section. It's from House File 568, and it allows people who are certified by the EMS Regulatory Board to provide emergency care to police dogs without practicing veterinary medicine without a license.
All right, thank you so much. We got the Officer Chase bill in here. Okay, next we have Mr. Chun is gonna tell us about the prescription drug article, Article 5.
Madam Chair and members, I believe most of these sections either don't have a cost or don't have a state cost that's shown on the tracking. So I'll just go through them. Sections 1 to 6 and 14 to 15 are from House File 1183, Representative Stevenson. This is the language that prohibits drug manufacturers from imposing excessive price increases. It allows the Attorney General and the Board of Pharmacy to enforce these provisions. Then Section 7 is from House File 633. This requires health carriers to offer at least 25% of their individual and small group plans with a pre-deductible flat dollar copayment for prescription drugs. Then top of page 7, Sections 8 and 21, this is new language that's from House File 1257 from the 2020 session. So this requires health plan companies to make their formularies available 30 days before renewal dates. It also limits the extent to which drugs can be removed from a formulary if this would sort of increase the cost to the enrollee. It also provides that certain changes that would increase enrollees' costs would not apply to that enrollee for the duration of their contract term. Then sections 9, 12, 13, and 22 are from House File 1516 as amended and modified. This deals with biological products, and it limits the extent to which a PBM or a health carrier can give preferential treatment to a single biological product. And the bill provides that if a health carrier does this, it has to also provide equivalent coverage to a reference, biosimilar, or interchangeable biolo product if these products have a wholesale acquisition cost that is less than the initial product. And also requires the Commissioner of Health to study the effect of these provisions. Then Section 10 is from House File 1576. It prohibits a PBM or health carrier from prohibiting a pharmacy from discussing drug acquisition costs and reimbursement with the patient, and also prohibits a PBM from prohibiting a pharmacy from discussing reimbursement information with the health carrier. Then Section 11, this is new language, although it's from House File 2114 in the 2020 session. This prohibits a PBM or health carrier from requiring an enrollee to pay at the point of sale an amount greater than the net price of a prescription drug. Then Section 16 is from House File 1158. This requires mail order pharmacies or specialty pharmacies when mailing drugs out to comply with manufacturer temperature requirements and to include a method in each package that allows the consumer to detect either improper storage or a temperature violation. And then Section 17 to 20 are from House File 1499. These sections make changes in the operation of the drug repository program.
Okay. So thank you, Mr. Chun. And so I think we're up to Article 6. Ms. Clarkquist.
Madam Chair and members, Article 6 is the health insurance article. Sections 1 through 9, 11, 15, 16, and 19 are from House File 1002, the first engrossment as amended, Representative Schultz bill. This bill codifies certain provisions of the Affordable Care Act and state statute, and it removes certain references to the ACA from state statute. Section 10 is House File 669, Representative Morrison bill. It provides for timely provider credentialing by a health plan company. Sections 12 and 17 are from House File 648, the first engrossment. This prohibits lifetime and annual limits on screening or urinalysis testing for opioids. And sections 13, 14, and 18 are from House File 520 as amended and modified. These govern coverage of contraceptives and contraceptive services and establish supply requirements for contraceptives. And that's it for Article 6.
All right. Thank you very much, Ms. Clarkquist. And then finally, we have Mr. Chun again for the last article, which is 7. And before Mr. Chun does this one, I just want to note for everyone that a lot of these provisions on the sheet say that they're Liebling bills, but they're actually, this is actually Representative Morrison's bill. So that's just an error on here that we'll fix. So want to make sure she gets credit because it is a lot of work for her. So please go ahead, Mr.
Chair members, and I'm sorry about transposing those names.
No problem.
I can make a correction on our next list. The Article 7 contains just two bills. So it's House File 1412, Representative Morrison, and then House File 1822, Representative Wolgamott. Both of these bills do cost money. Perhaps what I'll do is I'll just go through some of the major sections of those bills then. Unless you'd want me to walk through each, should I just?
No, I think if you just generally and
okay,
I don't think we need to walk through sure. Every piece.
Sure. So, Madam Chair, Section 1 of the article from House File 1412 This adds additional requirements for coverage of telehealth by private health insurance. So it changes terminology to use the term telehealth. It allows additional providers to provide telehealth services. It provides a definition of telehealth that includes audio-only communication. It prohibits telehealth-only networks, and it adds additional requirements related to parity and coverage and reimbursement. Also requires coverage of telemonitoring services. I'd say the next major section then would be section 10, also from House File 1412. This modifies MA coverage of telehealth services. Under current law, MA coverage sort of mirrors the private sector coverage in many ways. So this sort of continues to do that, so reflects the changes made in private sector coverage. It also eliminates the 3 visit per week limit, expands the provider types that can provide telehealth services, and allows coverage of audio-only communication between a provider and a patient. Then I'll mention that there are quite a number of sections from House File 1822. These are sections 13 to 14 and 20 to 22, and then also 16 to 19, 23 and 26, and sections 24 and 25. These basically apply to more of the sort of long-term care type services, targeted case management, long-term care consultation, and also the MFIP program. But it basically makes some conforming changes in the whole telehealth area. And it allows the use for targeted case management, interactive video, and specifies criteria for the use of interactive video. And then I think I'll just mention that House File 27 is a study of telehealth payment methods and telehealth expansion and how that affects delivery of services under public programs and private insurance. Then there are two sections, section 28. This provides an effective date of January 1 of 2022 for specified sections in the article that deal with telehealth and MA coverage and also substance use disorder treatment. And then section 29, also related to House File 1412, this provides that these same sections would expire or sunset on July 1st of 2023. I think that concludes my walkthrough of that article.
All right. Thank you so much, Mr. Chun, and to all of our folks from House Research. So we're kind of running behind, but I'm going to turn now to Commissioner Malcolm to make a few comments. And I hope we'll have a few minutes for Commissioner Harpstead as well. We're sorry we are running very much behind, but welcome, Commissioner.
Well, good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. I can be pretty brief, I think, in my comments. I know we'll have a chance over these coming weeks to talk more about all of these provisions. I just want to thank you for the invitation. Actually, this week is National Public Health Week. The first week of April historically is. It gives us a chance to acknowledge and thank the incredible public health workers in our state and around the nation for some just, I hardly have words to describe how hard they've worked and how important that work has been. You know, usually we in public health are kind of behind the scenes trying to prevent bad things from happening. And the paradox of prevention is that the better we are at it, the more invisible we are. This year has not been that. While we are still very much trying to prevent bad things from happening, we've been much more in the limelight. And I think that this year has taught us all so much about the importance of public health. And when it comes to public health emergencies, we've learned the lesson, and we need to make sure we learn it going forward, that the time to invest in the public health infrastructure is not after the emergency is already underway. And to that end, I really thank the legislature for passing the Public Health Emergency Fund a number of years ago at when this pandemic began. The fact that that fund existed helped us to move quickly. And I appreciate in this bill your continued support for keeping that fund whole and to serve as a resource for the future. So that's one of many things I wanted to really appreciate about this bill's clear recognition of the importance of prevention and public health. And I want to certainly acknowledge the importance of the new federal funding, the American Rescue Plan. While we await more guidance from the federal government on what that will enable us to do and what requirements and restrictions will come from that funding, is clearly a recognition at the federal level of the importance of infrastructure. But I very much appreciate that this bill at the state level also sees the need for sustained investments in improving public health in Minnesota. And there are many things here that will be very, very important to come out of the COVID pandemic and to build a stronger system going forward. The new investments proposed in this bill, particularly to support local public health and to address health disparities, are very timely and very welcome. We're in the midst of the COVID vaccine rollout, as you know, one of the most ambitious public health endeavors ever in the history of our entire country. But because of our strong vaccine ecosystem in Minnesota, we're proud that we have been consistently one of the nation's leading states for the rollout. But we know we can and must do better, especially when it comes to equity issues. We know that we've got gaps to fill and work to do to make sure that those people most affected by COVID are getting access to the vaccine and getting vaccinated at least in proportion to their share of the population, but frankly, more than that, just given the disproportionate risk that they face. So the inclusion of language in this bill to strengthen our vaccine equity work and to build on it more broadly is extremely important. As I mentioned, there are so many lessons to take from this COVID pandemic. We're already incorporating many of them, in certainly in our vaccine efforts, but see the opportunity to take what we've learned about equity and outreach and community engagement to strengthen our work, not only on vaccine issues, but more broadly to address health disparities going forward. So really appreciate that. And certainly there are many critical public health issues beyond COVID. A number of these issues have certainly been exacerbated by COVID, and I appreciate the committee's support and acknowledgement of some of these issues. I'll just call out a few of them. The bill's expansion of children's mental health services and mental health capacity overall in our state through expansion of telehealth is really welcome. I think the moratorium exception for beds for mental health and substance abuse is wise. And will be a welcome chance for us to encourage expansion of those services. Also appreciate the elimination of cost barriers to medications for the prevention and treatment of HIV, issues that have been around for a long time and are still with us, and an important disparity issue in our state. Another issue that's been with us and remains with us is tobacco cessation and prevention. I'm really pleased to see new investments in cessation and prevention of commercial tobacco use included in the House tax bill, but just would like to flag for this committee that we would really like to see the funding sunset removed that is currently there, as we think this will be a really important resource for what remains one of our top public health threats going forward. So just to flag that for you. We appreciate the alignment of this bill with the governor's budget in some really important areas. We know department operating costs and fee increases are often not the easiest things to make room for in your budgets, which are very challenging. But these operating costs and fee increases are so important to our ability to run effective and sound programs, and we appreciate you including them here, really appreciate the inclusion of the adjustments for newborn screening and the asbestos and radioactive materials programs are things that we have needed for a while and really will help us to strengthen those programs. And finally, just in closing, with respect to several of the policy proposals from us that have been included that Ms. Clarkquist just talked you through, really appreciate those, the inclusion of those here, just a number of really important issues to make sure that we can secure access to birth and death records, adding general surgery to the International Medical Graduate Program, updating the Groundwater Protection Act, many of those issues in the housekeeping proposals that may not sound very flashy, but are our core public health activities that we appreciate your support for. I would be happy to answer any particular questions you have, Madam Chair or members, but just wanted to make a couple of overall comments. Just deep appreciation for the clear importance that you're putting on prevention and helping to build our infrastructure so that we can keep on improving the health of all Minnesotans for generations to come. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much, Commissioner, and thank you for all your hard work for the state and how well you've captained the ship through these difficult waters. We won't take questions right now, but we'll give Commissioner Harpstead an opportunity to address us. And if there's any time, and if you can stick around, I don't know if there will be questions. Thank you. Welcome, Commissioner Harpstead.
Good afternoon, Chair Liebling and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on your omnibus budget proposal. I will be brief. We want to express our sincere appreciation that your omnibus budget package includes so many of the governor's priorities for DHS programs and services. Most notably, funding necessary to successfully transition out of program waivers implemented in response to COVID. This is critical in supporting a smooth transition for DHS as well as our county, tribal, and other community partners, as you so well know, having walked through the pandemic with us as we established all of these waivers. So thank you so much for your support. Expanding the Integrated Care for High-Risk Pregnant Women program for African-American women in the Twin Cities and building regional care collaboratives for American Indian women in Duluth, Bemidji, and the Twin Cities. Giving providers and the Integrated Health Partnerships responsibility for outreach for well-child visits, which will help ensure that children and families on medical assistance receive timely, effective communication about preventive care from their primary health care providers. Making public transportation passes more easily available to medical assistants in Minnesota care. Updates to Minnesota statutes and funding to ensure we're meeting federal requirements and can sustainably operate Minnesota health care programs, as well as our background study system. Funding for the operation adjustment to ensure continuity of DHS programs and services. We also appreciate you including many other important recommendations from the governor's budget, including many of the strategies considered by the Blue Ribbon Commission, as well as several policy proposals brought forward by the department. In addition, we're pleased to see shared priorities for laying the foundation for future healthcare reforms, investments to improve access to dental care, efforts to improve access to prescription drugs while controlling costs, expanding the use of telehealth services, improving women's access to healthcare after pregnancy, and initiatives to improve health outcomes for people accessing healthcare through medical assistance and Minnesota care. Thank you for all of your work. We look forward to working through the details of our different approaches to these and other critically important topics in the weeks ahead. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Commissioner Harpstead. That was quick. Wow. I know. So we do have time for a couple of questions if members have questions. Are there any questions? I am not seeing any questions, Commissioner. Thank you very much. I know, you know, as I said to Commissioner Malcolm, obviously she has sort of the highest profile right now with the pandemic and has been quite a leader, but you also have been just an amazing leader for us. And we, in what we've talked about today, we aren't even scratching the surface of all the improvements you've made at the agency and the big challenges you walked into that you've handled so very well. So thank you for your tremendous leadership for our state. We really appreciate that. Members, seeing there are no questions, there is a lot here. There's plenty for you to read and study. I'm going to lay over House File 2128. We have not adopted the DE yet, but that will still be before us when we take the bill up again. Tomorrow, we will hear public testimony on the bill. And then the amendment deadline is 1 p.m. on Thursday. Markup then will be Friday. So I know this is a very long week for everybody. This is kind of how the legislature goes with our deadlines. Anybody in the public who thinks that you don't work hard does not know how hard you work. I know every single member is working very, very hard at this time. With that, I will, as I said, I laid over House File 2128. We're going to be taking it up again tomorrow. I would just say that if you have, I remain available to you, and I know that also that Representative Schultz, Chair Schultz, is available. Should you have questions that we can answer, please reach out to us. And with that, seeing that there are no other questions from the committee, I guess I should give you just a quick little moment to see if there is anything. And not seeing anything. So until tomorrow, we stand adjourned.